yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yeah, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found, whose crimes have gone unpunished now, walk the streets a screaming now. Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. Okay, we're starting a little late today. Sorry about that, a glitch on my end. Thank you, Microsoft, for lousy software called Skype. Anyway, we will start the show today, which is a Labor Day show. We always do a Labor Day show focusing on labor issues. And today, I want to talk about these myths about rising wages and rising jobs under Trump. Yeah, they are myths. You know, a lot of misrepresentation of the data and what's going on, and a lot of independent data shows something quite different, that wages aren't rising for the vast majority, maybe for the very top level of 5 or 10% of the workforce, and of course for managers, but not for the massive 80% of the labor force. We'll explain why. And also this talk about jobs, you know, if you look a little deeper under the numbers, these are mostly part-time temp gig jobs, second and third jobs. These aren't primary jobs. Okay, we're going to talk about both of those myths, and maybe if we have time, also about the attacks that are continuing escalating under Trump on unions in general. Okay. So let's jump into this. I want to say, as I do every show, something about the news of the week here, the important economic news of the week. And there's several topics that I just want to address before we jump into the labor portion of the show. First of all, events this past week, very interesting. The Federal Reserve and a statement came out, public statement by the former president of the New York District Fed, a guy named Dudley. Yeah, he ran the New York Fed until recently retired. New York Fed, you got to understand, is the most important district in the Federal Reserve System. It's the one that engages in buying and selling bonds and foreign transactions and so forth. It's kind of like, you know, the most important of the 12 districts of the Fed, has certain powers, and it's tied into the banking system, you know, the big capitalist banks, which are mostly located in New York. So this guy Dudley, you know, former president, just retired here recently, within a year, I think, comes out and says that the Fed should not bend towards Trump's efforts to browbeat the Fed to get rates to lower interest rates. That it should resist Trump, because all Trump wants is to get reelected, to get the interest rates down to help him get reelected. And the Fed shouldn't do that, because Trump is obviously attacking the Federal Reserve, threatening this chair, Powell, to fire him and everything, got him to stop raising rates last year, December, January, and then continued the pressure and got Powell to start lowering rates this past July, and now wants even more and faster, larger rate cuts, Trump does, from Powell, and a big internal fight going on between Trump administration and the Federal Reserve. So this guy Trump, Dudley, comes out and pushes back, you see, and create a bit of a stir, because what it represents is the Fed is digging in its heels in this fight with Trump. Dudley would not say this if he didn't have the tacit, quiet approval of Powell and the Fed. This is not a guy out there on his own making these statements. The Fed doesn't operate that way, and the capitalist bankers don't operate that way. They clear this, you know, particularly an important figure like Dudley saying this. You know, they behind the scenes, they clear it before they do it. Right, so he's really speaking for the Fed, Dudley is. And it's an important shot across the bow by the Fed against the Trump administration. Of course, that's not going to change Donald Trump. And this Fed fight will continue down the road. So interesting. Another interesting thing this past week relating to Trump was his statement coming out of the fiasco of raising rates last week, raising tariffs on China, which almost sunk the stock markets until Trump over the weekend came back and said, wait a minute, we're going to meet and so forth, and placated the markets because there would have been a big drop this week. There wasn't. And what did Trump say at the beginning of the week as part of this attempt to placate the markets? Well, what he said was, I got a call from China, and they are desperate, and they want to meet to discuss tariffs further. As it turned out, there never was a call. He made it up. He made it up. You know, and the Chinese denied that there was such a call. Now, China has always said, we're ready to meet in September again if you want. So Trump's trying to spin this already set meeting, which is just a lower level meeting. It's not a meeting in the very top decision makers in China on this thing. So Trump is spinning it, you know, as if it's some big deal, and they are desperate and they want to come and agree to the U.S. onerous terms, which I've talked about on the show before. So interesting, you know, bizarro statements. Trump is making up things now. Making up and lying about what foreign allies and adversaries are actually doing and saying to make himself look good. Well, he's trying to keep the markets from imploding. Okay. That's an important event of the past week. Also an important event is Argentina defaults on its IMF debt. Yeah. It just borrowed here a year or so ago, $56 billion, the most the IMF has ever loaned a country to what? To pay back the U.S. vulture capitalists and hedge fund guys and to borrow more money from New York bankers. You know, the Macri government here, once it engineered a coup, a legal coup of sorts with the help of the U.S. against the other prior government in Argentina. This guy Macri is the president, big businessman, right? Well, he borrowed $56 billion, and now Argentina can't pay it back. Yeah, Argentina owns $101 billion. Oh, and the IMF is flying in teams into Buenos Aires and trying to renegotiate because it looks like this guy's going to get voted out here in October. The preliminary vote for the president down there that occurred last month showed that this guy Macri is like 15 points behind his opponent. So it looks like Macri is going out the side door here, and the IMF is worried, well, maybe this next guy, Fernandez, isn't going to play ball with us, and we're not going to be able to get our money. Well, it's inevitable there's going to be a default, hidden or actual, already beginning a quasi-default. Default meaning can't pay the principal and interest on your prior debts, right? That's a default. And the IMF has to come in and renegotiate the deal. And usually they lower the amount you got to pay right now by extending it in longer into the future and demanding more austerity from the rest of the citizens of the country, small businesses and workers and so forth. You know, you end subsidies and you raise taxes and you lay off government workers and you nationalize and privatize more businesses and sell. And so the government can make money to pay the principal and interest they owe to the IMF and the big bankers internationally. That's what austerity really is about, you see. And looks like we got a Greek debt crisis writ large emerging here in Argentina. Okay. India. Watch India. You know, Europe was the weak link, still is, in the global capitalist system, financial and real economy. But India is failing fast. both its financial economy. There's signs of financial crisis brewing over there, defaults and shadow banks and so forth. And now it looks like business and GDP is slowing, and consumers are beginning to feel the bite. So we got a classic recession and maybe financial crisis brewing in India. Watch it. Could be the next problem center in the global capitalist economy. And of course, watch Argentina and South America. The Argentina crisis will spill over to its neighbors, Paraguay, even Brazil, Uruguay. And watch what's going on in Europe, as I said, with the Brexit and the recession there in Germany already. The global capitalist economy is cracking, fracturing in various places. And it's a sign of the drift towards a global recession or worse. Okay, so that's it for the round robin, you might say, of events this past week. The Fed, China trade, Argentina, India, so forth. Let's turn now to talk about labor issues in this Labor Day show. Okay, what would be the labor issues that we want to talk about? Well, obviously wages, right? And jobs. Now, there's this myth that wages are rising in the U.S., and they keep throwing out this number of 3.1% growth, right? The official figure and average hourly earnings for wage and salary workers in the past year. 3.1%. Oh, wages are rising. Well, let's debunk that. First of all, there's some definitions here. There's so many statistics thrown out by the Labor Department and other departments, commerce and so forth, that confuse the definition. What are we actually talking about when we say wages? Well, you could be referring to hourly wages for non-supervisory production and service workers. You could be focusing or talking about hourly wages for everybody. You could be talking about hourly earnings. Well, hourly earnings include overtime pay and other adjustments in addition to wages. You could be talking about hourly weekly earnings, which is wages plus the number of hours you work. So if the hours work go up but your wages don't, your weekly earnings go up. Okay, so which one are you talking about? Make sure you find out which one they're talking about, whether it's truly wages or whether it's how many hours they're working or whether they're working overtime or whether salary workers are involved or what. Okay, so that's a problem. Which one? But the big problems are all of these figures that are thrown out, virtually all of them, are averages for everybody in the labor force. There's 162 million people in the labor force, right? And if you are talking about the total labor force and you're talking about averages, well, then the top 5% or 10% might be getting big wage increases and the bottom 80% little or nothing. You see, averages skew the number, the 3.1%, to the top end. It may be at the top end of what's called the wage structure, everybody getting a wage, the top end, 5%, 10% or less, right, may be getting raises more than 3.1%, and everybody below less than 3.1%, or even no wages, or even a reduction of their wage, and you get the 3.1% average. So you can't look at averages, you see. You got to look at median. That's the midpoint. That's not the average. You know, that's the typical working class person making $40,000, $50,000 a year. That's the median. And there are vast, vast greater numbers of those folks and those below them as well. So what does the median wage look like? Okay, so the point being made here is that most of these statistics quoted are averages. and the top, and we'll explain why the top 5-10% is getting far more and everyone else is being left behind. Okay, that's one problem, the averaging problem. Another problem is the 3.1% is what's called the nominal wage. Nominal means it's not adjusted for inflation. If you adjust it for inflation, the 3.1% falls more than half. And even the inflation estimates in the U.S. are underestimated for people at the median. They are average for everybody. But people at the median are suffering more greatly from rising lodging and rents and housing prices, right? From rising transport costs of various kinds, from taxes, local taxes and fees of various kinds, from rising education costs and so forth, right? The median gets hit harder. So really the adjustment for the median worker should be greater than the official increase in inflation, whether it's the CPI or some other index. Okay, so once again, you can't use averages if you want to find, the real situation, and you can't use nominal wages. You have to adjust for inflation, and you have to adjust for the fact that this data, 3.1%, is really for full-time workers. It doesn't count part-time workers or temp workers who aren't getting the full pay or gig workers. It doesn't include them. So three big problems with the 3.1% to summarize here. One, it's not the real adjusted for inflation. It's not even the really real for true inflation. Two, it's an average. And three, it's full-time workers only. And we've got over 60 million people out of the 162 million in the labor force who aren't full-time workers. They're part-time, temp, part-time, gig, whatever, right? That group is growing fast and has been for quite some time. Whereas, actually, if you look at the Labor Department statistics, full-time, the number of full-time workers is declining. Well, that's because companies are converting full-time to part-time. Or they're only hiring part-time, not hiring full-time. We'll talk about that. All right, so here's some alternative surveys, legitimate, respected, independent studies and surveys about what's really happening to wages. First of all, Bankrate, bankrate.com. Go check it out. Bankrate survey. This is a research arm for the banking industry. Okay, Bankrate survey actually found recently that 60% of all the workers in the survey said they got no pay increase at all in the past year. No pay at all, no wage increase, 60% of the labor force. Well, if 60% got nothing at all, then the top 5 or 10%, or because that's where it's skewed mostly, clearly got more than 3.1%. Clearly, they had to have. How much more? 7%? 10%? Who are these people? Well, these are software engineers, data scientists, business analysts, physician assistants, professionals with advanced degrees, middle managers. These are the people who are getting the wage increases, and they're getting more than 3.1%. All right. What about adjusting for inflation? Well, the 3.1%, even if you use the underestimated consumer price index of 1.6%, annual increase, the 3.1% becomes 1.5%. So let's adjust it for inflation to begin with. And what we got is 1.5% wage increase. But wait a minute, as I just said, half of the workers said they don't get it, they didn't get anything at all. So the 1.5% isn't 1.5% for them, it's zero or less. And that means, of course, that the top 10% got more than 1.5%, how much we don't really know. Well, here's another survey, PayScale, the PayScale Index, payscale.com. Check it out. PayScale says that real wage increases this past year was only 1.1%. In other words, it's even less than 1.5 if you take the 3.1 official figure adjusted by the CPI inflation of 1.6, you get 1.5. Well, PayScale says it's even lower. It's 1.1% over the past year. Okay, and again, remember, that's for full-time workers, right? And that's the average. McKinsey Consultants has another survey about median workers at the median. You know, that's this 40 to 50,000 annual income group. Well, what is McKinsey? You know, a very respected business consulting firm, big one. What does it say? Well, it says in the past year between June 2018 and June 2019, right, median real wages fell by 0.8%, which is just about the rate that it's been falling every year for the last decade, because median wages back in 2007 were 9% higher than today. So wages at the median have declined almost 10% over the last decade or so since the crisis. And that's continuing. Last year, last 12 months, 0.8%. Okay? So real wages at the median have fallen and are continuing to fall. And these are the 60% who say they're not getting any increase at all. You know, 'cause there has been some increase in the minimum wage in some states and localities, mostly the blue states, the urban states. So the very, very bottom of the wage structure, the poorest paid, have been getting, because of state action, the federal government refuses to raise the minimum wage from $7.25 an hour. And really, if you're in leisure and hospitality, it's like $2.50 an hour. You know, that hasn't adjusted since 2009 in a whole decade. But some of the states are raising their lowest rate. But it's not a majority of the states, you see. It's the blue states on the coasts. You know, the Trump states, the Trump heartland, dominated by Republicans, aren't raising minimum wages at all. Okay, so full-time, 162 million workers in the labor force, 37% of them, 60 million, haven't got a raise at all. Now, wait a minute. How the hell are they surviving? You know, if there's no wage increases. Well, the bank rate survey indicated, and this is a very important statistic here, that 45% of the 162 million people in the U.S. labor force are working second and third jobs. 45%. 60% say I got no raise at all, so they go out and they get second and third jobs. And that's what the job figures are picking up. We'll talk about that. All right, 45%, second and third jobs. You know, almost half of the labor force is working second and third jobs in this country. 48% of millennials are working second and third jobs. Generation Xers, 39%, according to the bank rate survey. And even boomers, 28% are working second jobs. A lot of them are people who have retired, many of them collecting Social Security at age 62 minimal because they don't have enough money to pay their rent, going back and once they hit 65 or even before, getting second and third jobs. What a great labor force this is. Wages are doing so good. Well, you know, the skewing of the wage increases to the top is even greater than the statistics I mentioned. Why? Because there's what's called the coding problem. What's the coding problem? Well, the Labor Department, right, does not really pick up all the wage increases for people making over $150,000 a year, if they're making a wage or salary over $150,000 a year, the government, the BLS says, the Bureau of Labor Statistics says, well, we're going to fix that at $150,000. In other words, that's the cap, that's the top. And if people above that got raises above that, it's not picked up. Check out the Economic Policy Institute, a recent study talking about that, the coding problem at the top. In other words, wage increases above $150,000 are not recorded. Right? That means that top segment is getting even more than 3.1%. Then another problem, you know, the gig workforce. The gig workforce came out with, not the gig workforce, but the Bureau of Labor Statistics came out with an estimate of gig jobs in the U.S. here a year or so ago. And they said, oh, there's a small number of gig jobs, very small. Well, they didn't count Uber in the whole thing. But more importantly, they only look at gig jobs that are the primary job for those surveyed. They don't pick up the gig work for second and third jobs. So in other words, they're lowballing it on purpose, right? Lowballing on purpose. And then there's another problem that's amazing that has to do with the job numbers, which raises, in my mind, questions about the reliability of some of these government statistics when it comes to wages and jobs. I'm not saying that they're purposely lying, but the methodologies that they use in the BLS has not kept pace with the changes in the structure of the labor markets. They're not really picking up a lot of the problems in their numbers, and we have to rely on these independent third parties like the Bankrate Survey, McKinsey, and Payscale to give us a more accurate picture of what's happening with wages. EPI, about the coding problem. You know, EPI, McKinsey, Payscale, Bankrate, all of these. I mean, if it was only one, you could be skeptical, but there's a whole number that are saying, well, wait a minute, when you dig down into these official government numbers, you know, they don't, there's some issues here. You know, at least acknowledge that there's some issues. You know, don't put your head in the sand and say, oh, these government statistics must be true, must be totally accurate at all times, as if, the world does not change and bureaucrats can't keep up with it. Yeah, there are those who have criticized me for questioning these government stats. So, well, how can you say that? I mean, you know, they would not lie. It's not a question of lying. Not a question of the Bureau of Labor Statistics lying. It's a question of them not being able to pick up the changes that are occurring, not only in wages. Let's talk about jobs on this Labor Day, right? Let's debunk the great myth about jobs. And that is, business tax cuts create jobs, business investor tax cuts. Well, you know, Trump cut taxes $4.5 trillion here at the beginning of 2018. Yes, it's $4.5 trillion because $2.5 trillion are going over the next decade to multinational corporations. And that's not picked up or estimated in the government's estimate of the tax cuts of being only $1.5 trillion. No, they're not $1.5 trillion. Right? Even that $1.5 trillion is really $3 trillion because they officially reduced the estimate to $1.5 trillion by assuming GDP is going to grow at a 4% rate for the next decade with no recession. That's how they get the actual $3 trillion down to $1.5 trillion. You see. But it's actually far more than that because they don't really estimate how much U.S. multinational corporations are going to save by not bringing back the profits they make offshore. Oh, they brought a little bit back and they're only paying 10% on it. instead of 35%, which was the rate it was. But all the future profits overseas, and they won't pay taxes on at all. Well, you think they're not going to move their operation, more of their operations offshore? Well, of course they are. And that's going to negatively impact jobs. So you see, the Trump tax cuts are actually designed to destroy jobs, but not just in moving more operations offshore. Look, the argument behind business tax cuts create jobs is as following, right? That if you lower business taxes, that will increase disposable income by business, which it does. But then the assumption is that that disposable income will be mostly, largely, totally, and immediately recommitted to investment, expansion of production. That's the assumption in that theory, that there's no time lag and that the disposable income made possible by the windfall tax cut does not go somewhere else. Well, of course it's going somewhere else. Where's the somewhere else? Well, businesses are sending it offshore, investing in markets that are more profitable. Well, most of it, I believe, is going into financial asset markets, stocks and bonds and foreign exchange and leverage loans and so forth. That's where it's going, most of it, because you can see it boosting stock markets, bond markets. Right. Well, how does it go there? Well, look at the figures on stock buybacks and dividend payouts. You cut windfall taxes, Trump does, right? In fact, the 27% increase in Fortune 500 profits last year, 23% of that was due to the windfall tax cut of Trump. Yeah, it's big subsidization of corporate profits with the tax cut. Now, of course, the argument at the time was, well, this is going to result in more investment. Tax cuts will create jobs. Yeah, that's what they say. They've always said that, you know, even under Obama, even under George W. Bush, Clinton, Reagan. This is the neoliberalism lie about giving more money to businesses will create jobs. Well, as I said, most of it goes into financial asset markets, or has been, or into mergers and acquisitions, financing business buying of each other up, right? But how much has gone into stock buybacks and dividend payouts? Well, in my forthcoming book next month, The Scourge of Neoliberalism, U.S. Economic Policy from Reagan to Trump, check it out on my website starting next week, and my blog, jackrasmus.com, right? Or you can go to the publisher, Clarity Press, or I think you can even buy it now on Amazon, pre-publication, right? Well, in that, I got an interesting chart that shows how much has been distributed in stock buybacks and dividend payouts. Yeah. Well, ever since 2011, it's averaged over $1 trillion a year, every year, corporations giving that money to their shareholders. $1 trillion. And in fact, this past year, 2018, is $1.2 trillion. And it's probably going to be larger this year because the Federal Reserve just released the banking sector to also start paying out stock buybacks and dividends, more dividends. So it's 1.3, 1.4, who knows? Any event, you know, it's like 8 years now of over $1 trillion of money, income, redistributed to the shareholders. Now, that's the number one cause of income inequality. Yeah, they've been holding down wages and everything, but they've been funneling money into their own pockets, and the government, with tax cuts, has been subsidizing corporate profits that get redistributed. And the Federal Reserve, with low interest rates, has been subsidizing as well. Fiscal monetary policy have turned into subsidization tools for the rich and their corporations. That's why the next recession is going to be worse, because they broke They've broken the back of fiscal and monetary policy as stabilization and recovery tools in the process of enriching themselves. Okay, back to this argument that tax cuts create jobs. What's the evidence? Well, if you look at Trump tax cuts, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars in the first year here for corporations. I think it's like $400 billion or more. If you look at it, what has that done for investment, business investment? I'm not talking about investing in financial markets. I'm talking about investing where they expand production, right? And they have to hire people because production has expanded, right? I'm talking, that's called real investment. Investment in plants and equipment and structures and inventories and so forth, right? Real investment. Well, if you're going to level the argument that tax cuts create jobs, you got to show that, okay, the tax cuts resulted in an increase in investment and therefore employment. But there's no evidence of that in the past year. In fact, investment went down from the beginning of 2018 to only 2.7% in the fourth quarter of 2018. So as these massive hundreds of billions of dollars in tax cuts began to flow into corporate coffers, they actually invested less in real investment. Well, that's because they were pushing the money in other directions, mergers and acquisitions, financial markets, offshore, just hoarding it. All right, so we do have, well, I haven't finished up here, 2.7% growth rate of investment fourth quarter of 2018. What was it the most recent quarter? Second quarter of 2019, even less. It contracted. So much for business tax cuts, boosting profits, in turn, boosting investment. Well, wait a minute. We did get 1.1 million jobs created last year. Well, it doesn't mean that 1.1 had anything to do with the tax cuts, because most of them were contingent jobs, you see. Most of them service jobs, low-pay jobs, no-benefit jobs in many cases, right? People taking on second and third jobs. Yeah, that's where the job creation's coming. Most of it contingent, part-time, temp, second and third jobs are really behind the increase. Remember that we're talking, you know, if you look at the other surveys, showing the bank rate survey, showing 45% of the labor force is working second and third jobs now. Those, of course, have to be part-time jobs because their full-time first job is usually a full-time job or a partial, almost full-time job. So they're working second and third jobs. And the Labor Department statistics aren't picking this up, I don't believe. Talking about Labor Department statistics, you know, just this past week, the Bureau of Labor Statistics revised its job numbers for the past year. And guess what? 500,000 less jobs actually created than it reported over the past year. 500,000. You know, the number is 1.1 million reported in the monthly employment survey. Created 1.1 million more jobs last year over the previous year, 2017. 1.1 could not have been due to the Trump tax cuts because investment has fallen through the floor. Well, okay. It has to do with service jobs that are mostly second and third jobs. And the Labor Department is not picking this up. So 500,000 less. Well, that's a big margin of error, you know, if we created 1.1, but wait a minute, that's overestimated by 500,000. Wow. Or even if, the 1.1 is after the 500,000 adjustment, revisions. You know, that's a margin of error of 30% to 50%. Something's wrong. something about the reliability of the job statistics has to be raised. You know, if you reduce the job numbers last year by 500,000, what you get is a monthly job creation of about 180,000 jobs a month in 2018. Well, that's the same 180,000 a month were created in 2017. So 2018, when we get the big Trump tax cuts, is the same number of jobs created as the previous year. So in other words, you can't say the tax cuts created jobs either for that reason. No investment increase, in fact, decrease, and no change in the number of monthly jobs created after this adjustment. Trump is not creating jobs, or the jobs that are created are second and third jobs. 1 million. Well, maybe not all of them are second, third jobs, but the overwhelming number is second and third jobs. And no net increase in jobs in 2018 over 17 per month. 500,000 jobs reduction in the revision. Investment declining. Bank rate survey saying 45% of the workforce is working second and third jobs. Hmm. 48%, almost half of all millennials, 39% of Gen Xers, 28% of boomers working second and third jobs. Well, no wonder people are pissed off. They're working harder and harder for less and less this Labor Day. Yeah. You know, looking at America this Labor Day, you have to look at what's happening with the destruction of unions, as well as the destruction of the society itself going on. Well, what about unionization? Well, deunionization has been going on since Reagan, but Trump is doing it too. Right? We've got only 6.5% of the private workforce that's unionized today. Used to be 35% at its peak. Only 6.5%. Neoliberalism from Reagan to Trump has destroyed the unions. And if you destroy the unions, you lower the union wage differential. Unions get, you know, a higher wage and benefit for their members for the same occupations compared to non-union. Well, that's another way of keeping wages compressed or falling. Eliminate unions, eliminate the wage differential for unions. Well, lots of ways to eliminate unions and jobs that follow. Well, you just send the jobs offshore, and that guts manufacturing, and all the union membership used to be in manufacturing. You know, manufacturing unions are down just to several hundred thousand. Used to be millions. Used to have 1 million members or more in the auto workers and the steel workers and the Teamsters. Well, now they're just hanging on. Well, offshoring has done that, gutted unionization in manufacturing. And you got offshoring because you got tax incentives being passed from Reagan on to give a tax cut to businesses that move offshore. Yeah. And then free trade, right, is another incentive to move offshore, because then it means the U.S. multinational corporations can move their goods back into the U.S. without paying tariffs. And free trade opens the markets of these other countries to U.S. foreign investment. And it creates a trade deficit. Free trade creates a trade deficit. But that's okay, because the agreement is those countries will recycle back all their dollars from the trade deficit back to the U.S., every year, hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars, maybe trillion. And that allows the U.S. government to run a deficit. A deficit created by massive business tax cuts and escalating war defense spending. You see, recycling this money back, this agreement, will run a trade deficit with you, the rest of the world, You know, you send the money back, and we'll use it to spend on war and defense and give tax cuts. Yeah, that's the game. It's called the twin deficit game. Talk about that in my book, to great extent. Well, other attacks on unions are occurring as well. Right? Onshoring of jobs, H-1B visas, L-1, L-2 visas, bringing in foreign workers to take the high-paying jobs, you know, in software, in tech, in communications, you know, other professions. Yeah, we bring them in. Yeah, okay, they're jobs, but they're not jobs for Americans. In fact, Americans end up training these people to take their jobs. A big attack on public workers under Trump here. The open shop drive. Open shop means that it's illegal to require anybody and negotiate a contract that requires you join the union. Yeah. That's called the open shop. Well, that's aimed at public workers, you see, particularly because it's already done great damage in the private sector. In about 30 of the states in the union where open shop laws exist, attack on collective bargaining in public sector. Oh, you can't negotiate your retirement and your health care, right? Take that off the table. Agency shop. That's where, you don't have to join a union, but because the union bargains for you too, even if you're not a union member, you got to pay what's called an agency fee, right? To pay for the cost of collective bargaining. Well, we had a recent decision called Janus, which outlawed that. And now they're going after union dues deduction. In other words, contracts often have union dues deducted automatically from paychecks, like your unemployment tax, your disability tax. Well, that's a way to deprive unions of their flow of income. So they're less effective. Federal workers taking away their rights to file grievances on evaluations and other union activity on the job. The National Labor Relations Board making it easier for government, for management to threaten, intimidate, and move operations. The Labor Department using more and more esoteric and complex financial fiduciary rules levied on unions, and the average union secretary treasurer has a hard time figuring all this stuff out. You know, even accountants and lawyers have a hard time. Well, they screw up from time to time, and that's a great way of going after and throwing them in jail. The courts saying workers, even non-union workers, can't engage in class actions anymore. That's the Epic Systems decision that came down. And then all kinds of rules saying that, gig workers are not really workers. They are independent contractors, and therefore unions can't organize them. You see, there's an offensive here, and has been since Reagan, and intensifying under Trump, particularly targeting public workers who still have a significant 30% plus unionization rate, going after them. Yeah. So this is the situation, deunionization. No wage increases, phony second, third job creation. This is the Labor Day 2019. Yeah. And, of course, Trump hasn't brought any jobs back from his trade war. In fact, you know, steel companies, auto companies are laying off everywhere. The U.S. is sliding into decadence. We see it with the gun violence. You know, 400 million guns in this country. Half of the world's single arms, in other words, rifles, shotguns, and handguns. Half of the world's exist in the U.S. 20 million assault rifles. You know, banning the sale of assault rifles. That's not going to change much because there's 20 million of them out there. How are you going to get them back? Over 100 gun deaths per day. 250 mass shootings just in the first 7 months of this year. Suicide rate escalating. Poverty rate rising. Homeless rate rising even faster. Well, We could go on, and we'll talk about those other indicators in future shows here, healthcare, education, security. But that's the picture of Labor Day under Trump in 2019. A lot of mist.